You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome into the Seminole Wrap Podcast. We're recording here August 14th. So football season, man, less than 2 weeks away. Hard to believe. I know it doesn't start with a bang, but at least they're on the field, and that's what counts. I'm your host, Brian Pellerin, here with John Marchant. And no Max this week, our young guy who's actually soon to be Bleacher Reports. Congrats to him while we're at it. But swapping him out while he moves up to Tallahassee and bringing in Tommy Meir. Tommy, thanks for jumping on in his place, man. I know you've been out at practice a decent amount over the last few weeks. We brought you on 2 weeks ago for practice reports. And so appreciate you making some time for us.
Yeah, no problem. And congrats to Max, actually. That's awesome.
Yeah, proud of our resident young guy who keeps John and I roped into the young, cool things. And John, I did make fun of you on last week's Brian McFadden episode, too. I said you were taking another Veterans Week off.
Oh yeah. It's like training camp, man. I just don't need to be there.
That's just roll the ball out there and then I'll be ready to go. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and you look at the team, I feel like obviously it's a little different. They don't get to take those same weeks off. They had their second scrimmage. I think it was their second scrimmage this week. Might've been, I think it was second regardless. And they made the trip over to UNF to continue kind of their fall camp over there. Obviously a fun experience for them to just get off campus and do something different. Tommy, I'll go to you first, man. What have you seen so far this week in reports out of practice or anything and that's kind of jumped out or anything from the scrimmage that you think is important for the people to know about?
It seems like Johnny Wilson is still progressing into like a big role in the offense. It seems like they're relying on him a lot. It seems like Benson is good. He's been good the entire camp. The coaches seem pretty happy with the way that fall camp has progressed and is progressing this off season, really going into, week zero.
Yeah. And I really like you went to Johnny Wilson because I feel like every time I open up my Twitter feed, it's Johnny Wilson matchup nightmare. I mean, the guy's 6'7" and it seems like he's making plays, not just like as a 6'7", I'm a big body throwing up there like a tight end would. More, he's still making plays down the field, which is good to see. I guess that's kind of what you'd hope out of a transfer. And I mean, John, I know we've talked about it a lot, the need to have a receiver pop. If Johnny Wilson's going to be that guy, or at least give you something in a matchup where, you know, Jordan Travis maybe doesn't have to be that precise, just, hey, there's a huge guy over there. He's taller than that guy. Go get it.
Absolutely. I mean, we talked a lot last year in a bunch of our episodes about how Florida State did not have a number one receiver. And that's And again, also that Florida State had the worst receiving core in the conference. So you needed to kind of flip that roster around, find somebody, right? We thought you might have a couple guys like Malik McClain and a few other guys who might be candidates for that number two spot, but you don't have that number one guy. And so I know Florida State's been looking for them. It has to have been a priority for Mike Norvell over the last couple off seasons. Hopefully somebody, whether it's Winston Wright or Young, or somebody kind of pops in and, like you were saying, and takes that spot, that role. The two biggest things you need, because we know that the way that Mike Norvell does his offense, right, he's going to create one-on-one matchups for his guys, right, whether it's a running back or a receiver. So you need to be able to create separation, right, and make the catch. That's all you really got to do, right? Hit your mark, create separation, and Mike Norvell's scheme will do a lot of the rest. So, and that's kind of what's been so frustrating, I think, especially over the course of last season. You hit a lot of those explosive plays, but you had no consistency in the passing game. And that's where I think a lot of fans, especially us, are really looking for a lot of progress to be made that season.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about that separation, being, I mean, 6'7", there's not a lot of DBs out there that are going to match up with that. And maybe separation isn't, I've got two or three steps on this guy. Maybe it's, I've got 6-7 inches on this guy, and you can just put it up and there is your separation. And what they do in the running game obviously helps out a lot. And we'll get to some of the running game stuff too, because we're going to go over those survey results that a lot of you guys were involved in, which was fun. Go ahead, John.
Well, yeah, I think you're 100% right, Brian. I think besides creating separation, I think one thing we didn't see a lot of last year was disappointing also from this unit was their contested catches, right?
Yeah.
You know, college is not like the NFL, where the NFL is a contested catch league. But at the college level, you still need to be able to make those catches. And I thought, especially like the Jacksonville State, like to Tommy's point earlier, the Jacksonville State game last year was a huge disappointment in that arena, where they were losing contested catches to Jacksonville State DBs, right? And that's just inexcusable. That can't happen. So,
yeah.
And I know Dugans took a lot of hit for that, the wide receivers coach, but that's something that has to improve this year.
Yeah, and talking about it, I mean, obviously, like we talked about, talk about, how many times can I say it in a two-sentence phrase? But, you know, if Johnny Wilson makes that step, you have brought in guys like Micah Pittman and Deuce Span to be kind of that explosive aspect of the team, right? The speed, that extra kind of X factor who can break one for us. And I know Mike Norvell kind of mentioned that in his, I guess, his post-scrimmage press conference, talking about their ability to hit explosive plays. They hit a couple of them. And one thing I thought that was interesting from their Jacksonville thing too was Michael Pittman talking about Jordan Travis earlier this week. He said he is, I want to get the quote exactly right. He's been super impressive. I told him I haven't seen a guy like him since Jay Herb. And that's his former quarterback at Oregon and now the Chargers quarterback, Justin Herbert. Again, he doesn't say you are Justin Herbert. He just says, I haven't seen a guy like him since then. So, I mean, I don't really know the names of the quarterbacks he's had in between, but I got to say that's pretty high praise, and you've got to like that. I mean, you like that out of your quarterback.
It's crazy that you mentioned that, because, you know, sitting at practice, I was standing next to like Winston Wright and a couple of the other guys on the sidelines, and, you know, Travis threw this bomb to Pittman, and it came over his shoulder, and it was caught. Probably was like just a perfect play like that I've seen in practice. And Wright was like, man, Jordan Travis is so good. Like the whole like sideline was talking about how good Jordan Travis is, you know, and I guess it speaks to what the team feels.
Yeah.
Or how the team feels about his play making ability.
And it's good when you hear it from the receivers, right? I mean, you know, he's putting the ball where they're like, wow, that was a great, like they're like, yeah, you know, they feel like the throws are helping them on top of just like, hey, I caught it.
It's not only that. And the defensive sideline too, that same day, he threw a pass to Johnny Wilson, and the defensive sideline was like, oh my God. Like, because Wilson had like four or five steps on a undersized defensive back, and even the defensive sideline was like, oh my God, that was like, that's going to be a touchdown. And it was a really good play.
And I think that's also so important is him taking that next step. I mean, Brian McFadden mentioned a lot last week that, you know, he called this a almost needs to be a almost, he didn't say it this way, but it's like a put up or shut up year. You know, it's like, this needs to be the year for Jordan. This is the year he needs to progress. And it's good to see the receivers, even those, you know, who have just transferred in, to say, hey, yeah, this guy is it. And you know, I know maybe he's not looked at across the country as like a top tier quarterback, but I think he's a guy who's he's going to be a household name, hopefully by the end of the year, because of what he can do both running the ball and with this extra added. If they could just catch a few of the balls that they missed last year, I mean, they would be in a much better place. And it's not like they're that far off. I mean, John, we talked about it all last year. It's just, if they make a couple of extra catches in, and just top of my head, like you mentioned, Jacksonville State game, Notre Dame game, Florida, just a couple of balls just stay in guys' hands, and it's a totally different season.
Yeah, just hold on to the ball.
Yeah, 100%. Right. Yeah, exactly. Even Clemson. I mean, that game wasn't as close as it looked, but they had it close for a little while, score wise. But yeah, the Jacksonville State game, man, that was so frustrating because they just dropped balls all over the place against guys they should have dominated. And it's, I don't know. There's nothing left to say about that game at this point, but.
Yeah, we can bury that one and let it go.
Still mad about it.
Still mad about it. Well, looking around, it doesn't seem like there's all that much defensively. I mean, I mentioned those explosive plays earlier, but Adam Fuller said he was pretty happy with once they gave up those explosive plays, they locked down. So, I mean, nothing. I don't see anything there that really was like, whoa.
Oh, well, that's Adam Fuller's scheme, right? We should all know that by now. Yeah. He's really aggressive. He's going to dial it up on first down and third down. He's going to try to get you off the field as soon as possible. And that means that, you know, he puts his guys one-on-one on islands, and they're going to get beat sometimes. That's how it works, you know? They're going to take that, though. It's almost like those Oregon teams when they had Marcus Mariota. You know, he was putting up all these points on the board, but they had their defense just sell out, right? Because either they're going to get a stop or they're going to give up a touchdown, which just gives it back to their offense anyway. So they're almost like kind of playing that war of attrition with their opponent, saying, we bet that our offense can score more points than yours can. Let's give our offense the ball as often as possible. I don't think that a strategy like that this year would necessarily be bad. I don't think that they should do that. But again, we're talking about a defense that is going to be aggressive. It is going to give an explosive plays, right? You just hope that with Jordan Travis's development and the development of these receivers we're talking about, that you can be consistent enough in putting points on the board. Maybe you're scoring 30, 40, 45 points a game, that you start to win a lot more of those close games that they lost last year turn into W's this year.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem that far away. And like you mentioned, if they can, I don't know. I mean, I feel like we're far away from a Marcus Mariota level offense, but if you're at least explosive, I mean, right, it gives you a chance, right? And we've talked about that all off season here is if they can find that explosion on offense, then they can have a puncher's chance. And the defense really wasn't all that bad last year. I guess the one area you still have to worry about is what that offensive, well, I mean, you still have to worry about the receivers because I think you have to see it in action before you really believe it's an improvement there. But I mean, the offensive line as well is another area, and it just seems like we're not really 100% sure on what that group's going to look like just yet.
Right. But I think it's fair to believe that this defensive unit will be a top three or top four unit in the conference, right? I think that's safe to say. They got the talent. I think a lot of these guys now, you've moved on from the Willie Taggart era. You kind of cycle some guys out. The guys that have been here, like, say, Fabian Lovett, they're the kind of leaders. They've been here for several years now. You know, Adam Fuller and Woodson have gotten a chance to develop some of these guys on the back end. You know, Travis Jay or Kevin Knowles, or again, Jamie Robinson, who Fuller talked about in the press conference the other day. So, right. Yeah, exactly. So there's guys there that they can – again, if they've truly bought in, there should be some progress here. I think we're going to see a solid unit. I think that's safe to assume.
I think so. Oh, definitely. Yep, definitely. I think the defense is going to be good. The defensive line has been pretty impressive. You know, and in the secondary, McClendon, I was looking at him the other day and I was watching them. They're just doing bag drills, but I was trying to figure out like who popped, like who stood out of the defensive linemen. And he was one of the guys that was just like, wow. I was like that guy's got fast. He's got crazy good hands. Like he turns the corner well. Like I like him at least in that particular moment at practice. You know, he's good, but that's what stood out to me about him.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you mentioned him. McClendon went from a guy back at the season before last. He's just a kind of an overlooked player. He didn't play very well. And over the course of last season, he just improved so much tremendously that towards the last couple of games of last season, especially in the Florida game, he played really, really well. And I think 100%, Tommy, I think you're right. He's going to be up there with Lovett as one of the most important players on defense.
Yeah, exactly. And Lovett and Cooper have both been tremendous to me in camp.
Have you been able to see, and I'll backtrack it, but on that offensive line, kind of what have you seen there?
You see new guys stepping up. That's what you see there. There's been an influx of talent, and you see the new guys. You see the vets that are, you know, rotating in. I think that they're building a strong unit. It's the depth is going to be a problem when you start mixing and matching different positions, but that's what they're doing right now. They're trying to cross train multiple people, you know, into these different positions in case something happens. So yeah, the offensive line, second string offensive line has been great. Like, they hold the pocket well, you know, they hold the run game well against a good run defense. First team has been good. You don't really have to talk about them. I think when you get down to your third and fourth levels is where you start to see a drop off, and it's not that much, but as a big picture, like, it's significant, I think.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. I mean, I've seen it talked about for NFL stuff, right? It's continuity is king when it comes to offensive line, and college, obviously you only have guys for a certain number of years. And as John, we've talked about it a bunch, when you're trying to catch up and not reaching blue chip talent up front immediately, like, it's hard to then, when you know you're going to be replacing these guys who probably aren't starter quality and having to just keep changing pieces, it gets harder and harder, but it feels like they're starting to find some consistency there, which is good.
Right. It's been a really long road, a really slow process. Remember under Taggart, Cam Akers, we had guys who shouldn't be Division I starters, right, at all. And they had nothing behind them. Now they went to guys who could start. They're maybe average or something like that, kind of starters at the Division I level or the ACC conference level. But there's no depth behind them. But now, like Tommy was talking about, there's more of that functional depth. Those guys that you could rely on if you had to. Maybe you can go eight, nine guys deep. I know Ludi, they lost Lyles, right? I'm pretty sure they lost Lyles for the season is what I read. Which hurts, you know, but I don't think he was going to be a starter, but he could have, you know, kind of fought for that spot. But so you go from like 10 guys you trusted down to like nine. Hopefully, I think Mo Smith, hopefully he's okay, I think. But so that does hurt, but you have more
hands,
but you have more of that functional depth that you didn't have in previous seasons where, like, say if an offensive tackle goes down, you're totally screwed. Yeah. You have no real backup. Right. That's what's kind of killed them in other games in the, you know, last season, the season before. So hopefully this year, finally, we start to, like Tommy was saying, we start to see more of that really good functional depth. Some of that talent that comes in, you got a lot of young, talented guys who you may not see or reap the rewards of until 2, 3, maybe even 4 years down the road, but they're in the program. Right. And that's the important part.
And the guy I immediately thought of when you were talking about that, and I don't even think it'll be that long, is Armella. I mean, it's just, I feel like I constantly just see how well he's doing and how is it a size thing, Tommy? Is he look the part? How's that look out there?
He looks the part. Yeah, definitely. I remember the first day I saw him in practice, I was like, he looks, you know, he's standing next to like a senior offensive lineman, and I'm like, man, they look the same. Armella, I haven't gotten a chance to talk to him much, but Armella is cool and he's good. He's definitely fills that five-star like billet. What I wouldn't like to play him this year, but if it has to, I think he's capable.
Yeah, I think he's a guy who's capable of giving you probably at, you know, average starter ability, probably if you threw him in right now or you know, in that realm. I like you said, I wouldn't want him out there. I'd like to take the year and strengthen him and you know, get him in the program and all that type of stuff. And but I don't know, from everything I see and the way he seems to approach the game, it feels like a guy he's a guy who could be, he could be, if you needed him, I wouldn't feel terrible about it. And that's where we talked about before. I mean, I think it was maybe a month ago now, we did the episode about building the trenches, and they have really, really put the focus there, and it seems to be working. We just talked about the defensive line too, and that's the two key portions of that.
You got to look at Sapp too. Sapp is, he's probably not, I'm not going to say he's not on the same level as Armella, but they're at different stages of their development. But Keyshawn Sapp is also going to be a really good, solid player when it's all said and done. To me, like, he's huge. I remember his, like, when he committed to FSU, we were staying outside the Moor, and I'm like, from that point until now, like, he's a big player, a big dude. Like, I'll try and take some more pictures of him next time to try and show you guys, but he's a big guy.
And you'll tweet those out on your Twitter account, which is?
It's 7Toms, T-O-M-M-S.
There you go. At 7Toms, it's where you can find the pictures of just how big Sapp is. I'll go ahead and transition awkwardly from that now to the season survey we sent out. I thought the results on this were kind of fun. It's the SB Nation Reacts, kind of getting the feeling for what the fans think. And I'm just going to let us just talk through some of the questions. Tommy, I know you were part of it. And guys, if you are listening to this and hadn't weighed in yet, feel free to jump on this story. I think it's still on the homepage. Just a handful of questions. What do you think about the season? Just, you know, give us your answer. And first one, pretty straightforward. Tommy, you've already answered, so I'm going to go to you first. We'll try and keep the answers relatively concise because, like I said, it's already a written article. But will FSU beat a rival in 2022? And we're defining rival on here as Clemson, Miami, or UF.
I love this question because I'm also a fan. I'm going with, like I said, an article of Miami. Let's do it.
I like where your head's at.
All the talk. I want to see Tyler Van Dyke on the ground. By the hands of Derek McClendon. You know, safe, like, sportsmanlike, but.
John, I feel like you might be less confident.
Yeah, I mean, I think you get three chances, right? So Right. Even if all three are favored against Florida State, odds are maybe Florida State steals one of them. I think that's decent. I'll go with Florida as the most likely. If I had to go a little bit further than that, I'd probably say Clemson too. Mm-hmm. And then Miami is the least likely. I agree with Tommy. I would love for them to be the one that they get. That would be incredible. But Van Dyke is absurd. And it sucks that it's happened to two Florida State rivals in a row, found a backup QB who ended up being better than their starter. It's stupid. But I'll go with the Gators as the most likely one.
Yeah, I think it's Florida too. I mean, I want to put Clemson probably second. I think it just depends on which version of, I think to me, it's like what version of DJ shows up for Clemson. If you get the DJ we had last year, I think they're once again beatable. And if he's the version he was last year to a level where they change quarterbacks, then you might be in trouble. So, you know, and if he's good, then you probably are in trouble regardless. So I think it just depends on what DJ is. And that's all up there. And like we talked about a few weeks ago, Tyler Van Dyke looked so good last year. I'm just not going to try and slow his roll. This next one was a little interesting.
Those are more level-headed opinions than mine.
But I think people will be more happy with your opinion than ours anyway. But the next one, will Jordan Travis throw for over 2,000 yards? I did the math on this one. That's 167 yards a game. John, we briefly talked about this before the show, so I know your answer. I'll let you go first, though.
Okay, so when you put it that way, 167 yards per game, that seems obviously, of course, right? How could he not? I'm going to go no, although this is tough for me, but it has nothing to do with Jordan Travis. If Travis had the receiving core that he deserves, that Florida State should have with the talent level that they should have, of course he would beat it. But them being the worst group in the ACC last year, I just can't. And it's like what Tommy said earlier, until I see it, I can't say yes. I just can't. Knowing that this is going to be, again, more of a run-based attack, I think it gets a lot more than the 1,500 got last year, which is 500 more than the year before that. But does it get another 500, 2,000? It's possible, right? I'll go maybe 55% no, 60% no, 40% 45, yes, he might. That's how close it is, but I lean no.
So I'll go yes, and I'm going to keep it. I'm going to stick it to 12 games because obviously I think if they go 6-6, then they'll play a bowl game. So it'd be 13, but I'm just going to cut it off and say 12 because if you're going to give us 13, again, I mean, we're talking about 140 yards a game. So I'll say 12 games, but I think he's got to play 12. I think if he gives you 10, then he might not, you know, and that's where you end up in the same limbo where if he, you know, turns an ankle, hope that rang through and didn't bark my dog. But, you know, if he turns an ankle, I mean, then 200 yards a game is going to be maybe a little bit harder, especially the way they run the ball. Tommy, I'll let you go ahead next.
Oh, no, I said yes in the article, but I do agree with John's, like, I had that initial feeling when I first read that question. It was kind of like, yeah, maybe, yeah. It depends on a lot of different things.
It does, right. Not Travis's ability, though. Everything else.
Right, it's all the outside of his control type things.
Right.
And one of those is probably going to be this next question. Will FSU have a 1,000-yard rusher? And Tommy, I probably should have just read your answers before I came to this, but I'm going to go ahead and go first. We'll just cycle through each of us. I say no. I think Benson probably ends up the closest as my guess on it, but I just think you end up with a bunch of guys around 600-700 yards. And I'm not even sure anyone really gets all that close to it unless someone just consistently breaks off longer runs. I'm not really sure you get there.
I think you're closer to having an
all-yard rushing QB.
Yeah, an all-purpose yarded back hitting 1,000 than having 1,000-yard rusher. I think that the rotation of the running backs is going to be pretty steep. You're not saying that they're not capable. I fully believe in every running back on the roster, especially Rodney Hill. You know, Rodney Hill is going to be good in his progression, but I think you're close to having 1,000-yard rushing or all-purpose yards back instead of just rushing.
I agree with you guys. Well, I said this to Brian right before we started, is the 1,000-yard rushers that Mike Norvell's offense had before, like when he was at Memphis, is when he had statues at QB. Jordan Travis is not a statue, right? So he's going to vulture, we know, 600-700, maybe even 1,000 yards. Then sometimes he likes to do the split back things where he'll put a receiver back there and he'll run with the receiver, right? So no, it's not because, again, I think this as a team, I think they could easily cross 2,000 yards. I think they'll probably get than 2,500 yards as an offense, but one guy is 1,000. I don't see it when you're splitting it so many different ways, right? And Benson might even get close. But like Brian said, you might have three guys or four guys who get 700 plus yards, right? So it's just, I don't know that anyone's going to cross 1,000 except for maybe Travis.
I'm going to skip this next question because I think it's loosely defined. It's how confident are you in FSU's success this season? I mean, you know, I guess everyone has different expectations of success. Everyone has different levels of success. Freudian slip there. I did like this one answer, though, from John Knoll 78. History hurts my confidence, which is a funny response. The one thing I want to tackle, and I don't think we probably saved the longer discussion about it for next week, but will FSU win over six games, John?
I'm going to say yes. I think most likely 7 and then 8 and then 6. So, yes, I do think that they go to a bowl game this year. I think that Mike Norvell has to go to a bowl game this year to keep his job. But I do think, again, for some of the reasons we talked about earlier in this pod, I think it happens.
Tommy.
Yes. For all the reasons John just explained, but I do think that this team is going to go 6 wins. If the team doesn't, it's you're kind of like back at square one. You can still build from that, but
right.
Yeah.
It's put up or shut up. And I think that they have the put up.
Right. It's just, we talked about it before, right? I mean, it's the puncher's chance. I mean, and actually John and I were talking about this before we were chatting before we started, but I mean, your ball bounces two different ways last year. And just, you know, even the Jacksonville State game, you make a tackle and you have 6. And then you were really close in Clemson and Florida and a handful of others where, I mean, it's one play and next thing you look up, you're at 7 or 8. And I get that, you know, we've talked about it was the line of all last season. Progress isn't linear. So I can't just say, well, that means this year the ball will bounce that way and it'll go 7, because there are probably 2 or 3 other games where the ball could have bounced the other way and they're back at 5 anyway. So, I mean, yes. I mean, I don't understand how you can expect less than 6. I think the expectation is 6. More than 6, I'm with John. I think I expect seven. I would probably go seven. With seven more likely, seven than six more likely than eight. I don't know. I just have a hard time seeing eight. I mean, honestly, if I sat down and looked at the schedule, I could probably find eight, but just like off the top of my head being like, yeah, they'll win eight. I'm like, ooh.
It's going to be tough, but I think they might. They got a chance.
Yeah. I mean, well, you'd lose four, which I mean, you know, you've got some combination of probably LSU, Clemson, Florida, Miami. I mean, I guess it depends what Sam Hartman looks like, right? For Wake.
With our look, he's going to be back from his injury like week before we play
him. Yeah, and it's a non-football. I forget if it was an illness or injury, but his timetable is still unknown. But I mean, yeah, I think you're right. I think six or seven is probably fair. And I think that really about covers it.
The last question on there real quick is the biggest game at FSU season. 47% said LSU. I'm just throwing this in there real quick because that kind of surprised me a little bit. I know everyone wants to start on that big thing, but I'm going to go Clemson because that's still the barometer that you have to measure this program with. So LSU surprised me, but I get it because it's the first game. So
yeah, I mean, well, Brian McFadden was on here last week and was like so adamant that the season, obviously it starts with LSU, but he was like this need to come out and set a statement, right? Like as if they came out and if it was 1-1, it was the end of the world almost. And I don't know if I disagree. I mean, I didn't really challenge him on it because I felt like I saw his point, right? To come out and be confident in where you're at to set the stage for the season. But I mean, do you want to elaborate on Clemson?
Me?
Yeah, you've said Clemson.
Well, like, yes, I would like to elaborate on them. let me get my thoughts together. So they had a national championship level elite defense last season.
Yeah.
But Venables leaves for Oklahoma, which we all thought would never happen. We talked a lot last season about the holes in Clemson's armor kind of starting to show, so to speak, of the cracks in their program. So their defense will still be very, very good. They will not be as good as they were last year. How far and how fast do they fall? We don't know yet. But then the other part of it rests on DJ, right? Uyunglele. I think he improved a little bit last season, but he has some real limitations. How good can he become is a real question, right? If he's not going to be who they thought he was going to be, right? But if he still continues to progress, they can blow through 10 and 11 wins easy.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't, and he still does not continue to improve, you're again looking at eight or nine wins, I think. And like you said before, that makes Clemson very beatable. But I do think that I think Florida State's about the fourth most talented, maybe third, fifth, fourth most talented program in the conference. So that's within striking distance. Are they going to do that every single year? No, but they could, right? If some of the other factors kind of fall their way. So I think Clemson's vulnerable. I think the run of being perennial national title contenders is very, very over. But that doesn't mean that they can't strike every once in a while.
I think I'm agree with the audience on LSU. And I know I get clowned for being an LSU guy as it is, but I think this LSU team is super vulnerable and is one that gives you credit for beating a power. I'm not quite sure they're there. If you listen to my preview episode from, I guess it was probably June now thinking about it, with Brody Miller from The Athletic, we kind of went over LSU's entire roster, and I can tell you today, they're not really all that close to being settled at quarterback. It looks like Jaden Daniels, the transfer from, I believe, Arizona State, is going to be the guy. The guy who was pushing him was Garrett Nussmeier, who hasn't really seen any significant time at all. He's a hurt, so it looks like it's going to maybe be by default Jaden Daniels. Their sixth-year senior quarterback, Miles Brennan, isn't there. It seems like he's just not going to be a starter, just not good enough. And the defense is, I mean, I think they got one of the best defensive lines in the country, which is a problem because they're just so athletic. It's just kind of what LSU breeds over there. But their offensive line isn't deep. Their receiving core is really good, but their DBs are just, I mean, they've got a transfer from UL Lafayette, a transfer from Oklahoma State, a transfer from, I think, Georgia. I mean, it's just like six guys who transferred in. Arkansas is another one. And they're just all out there like, I don't know. I just don't know.
You've got a new coaching staff, too.
A brand new coaching staff, right. And they only kept one guy, which is the O-line coach. And so it's like, it's a roster that going to be playing their first game with guys from everywhere, brand new coaching staff. And it's just, I just don't know what LSU is. I think they're probably a team that finishes the year with 8 or 9 wins, but in the first game, they could definitely be wide open to be beaten. And by the end of the year, 100%. You look up and you go, wow, that's an 8-win team we beat to open the year. And it's a totally like, wow. I don't know. LSU might show up and all those. The kid from Oklahoma State was all Big 12 and he's a top rated kid for the draft. And all I hear about the kid from UL is that LSU tried to recruit him to begin with, kind of fell off because they were paying attention to another kid and let him slip away. So he's talented enough to be there as it is. And it's like, okay, so it looks like they just pulled in a ton of top tier D1 talent, but game one, are they all going to just click and be an elite defense? Like, I don't know.
That's a good point.
Well, right. I guess the real part of this question is the way that the question was worded was the biggest game of the year.
Yeah.
Because I agree with everything that you said. And again, what Tommy said earlier, this is going to be a couple years away from the team that Brian Kelly wants. I think LSU is overall more talented than Florida State is at this point.
Correct.
But like Tommy said, it's a brand new coaching staff. It's all new systems. It's a big change between Orgeron and Kelly. It has to be, right? Because we know about Orgeron and we know about Kelly. They're very different guys.
And they fired Orgeron 6 games into the season. And he was like some kind of interim coach for 6 games. It was a very weird setup. Yeah.
Right. So, and you lose some guys, guys are going to transfer out because they loved Orgeron. And then you have all those transfers in. Yeah. It's good. I agree with you. We don't know what else he's going to be. So I don't fault or blame the fan base for thinking that LSU is the biggest game of the season. But I think we're really talking about semantics over the wordage, which I can't believe I just said wordage. But anyway, it's talking about the biggest game. It's not necessarily the most important game, but I'll give that to people because I understand that because LSU is the first big game of the year, it's going to set the narrative, right?
Yeah, you got to set the tone.
Right. It will set the tone for some of the rest of the season, or at least that's what the takes are going to be. So while I think Clemson is the more important game, because that's how you really measure the progress of this program, because Clemson has set the benchmark for this conference, right? If you're going to start winning ACC titles again, you have to go through Clemson.
Right.
It's just the way that it is. But I can see and I understand the argument for LSU being the biggest game, because it's going to set the tone for the rest of the season, or at least that's when the takes are going to start coming out.
Well, and I think a good way for you to look at it, John, is, and I think this is how we ended up on different sides of the coin, but maybe the way you're looking at it, if I gave you the choice to win one game this season, you would pick Clemson.
Probably. Yeah. Probably.
If you could guarantee one win, you'd pick Clemson.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. And I think the way I was looking at it was like, if we were to win one game, like, I guess, if I can set it up, I was like, well, if you can beat LSU, that probably sets you up for more success going to, because you have the bye the week after. You're probably, I don't know, I guess you could get overconfident going to Louisville and lose. But, I'm seeing it that way. But I don't know if I disagree now that I'm hearing your argument for Clemson either. I think it makes sense where if it's like, hey, if Clemson comes to town and we beat Clemson, it's like, hey, that's a huge win.
Well, that's the thing. But to your guys' point, though, if we beat LSU, I mean, everyone's going to be telling lies, right? We're all going to go nuts about how good this team is going to be. We're going to win 9 games or 10 games or whatever the case is. And I do think that LSU is more vulnerable than Clemson, right?
Yeah.
I do think that they are for all the reasons that we talked about. So we all really, really, really want this LSU game. It feels in a lot of ways very similar to the Oklahoma game, right? Was that 2010 or 2011, whatever year that was? It feels very much similar to that. We all really want it. Is this team ready? That first matchup with Oklahoma, the answer was no. So we'll see how if this one turns out differently, but that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Here's Tommy's take from the article. LSU set the tone for the season and run with it, period. That was it. Tommy gave us, one sentence.
No, John's thinking more perennially. And I think
it makes sense though. It makes sense.
We all should be. I guess that's how you look at it. If you lose to LSU, that sucks. But if you come around and beat Clemson and go on, I really think LSU is the game. But I understand John's point the LSU doesn't matter next year unless you're talking about recruiting, and doesn't matter 2 years from now. But I see what where everyone's going with it.
Well, right? I think it might matter 2 years from now. Isn't there a game in Orlando?
Oh, there. Yeah. Sorry,
I think so. But no, it's fine. I mean, go ahead, John.
Well, like watching we were talking, Brian, you and I, right before we started recording about the interview coaches, right? I was listening to the interview with Adam Fuller and Alex Atkins on Tomahawk Nation. And they talked a lot about mental toughness, right? They're trying to get that mental toughness into this team, responding to adversity, which they obviously, I think we can all agree, they didn't really do a great job in last year. They kind of got better as the season went on, but that's something I think to Tommy's point that it may answer this question for us, right? Is how mentally tough are they? Even if they lose to LSU, can they rebound, or does that really set the tone for the rest of the season?
And John, I think here to your point, I'll read you the three answers from our article from the comment section. Coleman Nolman said, so all together now, class, quote, what is the biggest game of the year for our beloved Florida State Seminoles? Those beastly, horrible, pathetic Florida Gators. All right, class dismissed. A great answer. Rob Oregon gave us the biggest game will be LSU game. Need to win that on national TV, which I think is a statement we've already said. And this is the one I wanted to get to, though. A 34-pound sack with underscores in between there. Hopefully you mean tackles. Louisville is most important because win or lose against LSU, we need to see how Norvell can get the team to respond in the next game on the road versus an ACC team right before a slew of other tough ACC Atlantic Division opponents. Win or lose against LSU, great. You still have to go on the road against Louisville. And I think that's a good point. I mean, yeah. It's for it, but I guess where it comes back to me for this one is like a program like you are, they're all big games. Even, yeah. I mean, even Duquesne.
You have to win.
Because what we saw last year, all of them are big games.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot of seasons past at Tomahawk Nation about how FSU used to get the shaft by the conference where you would want to support one of your premier or your flagship program, and the ACC didn't do it. And this year, I felt like their schedule was fair, even maybe a little bit more than fair. I didn't think it was bad at all. So, yes, you have to take advantage of it when you can.
Yeah, and I think I really just dropped the greatest knowledge nugget you might ever get from Seminole Rap in the history of this podcast. All the games are important. That is analysis, friends, and that's the beauty of college football, isn't it? Well, I think
we're gonna shut this pod down now.
Yeah, that'll do it. I think that we can't get any better than that. That's all we've got.
That was the peak.
Well, I think I will actually call it for the night, though. For Brian, John, and Tommy, we're talking some practice, and I think next week we'll be back looking probably full season. And what do we hope to see against Duquesne? Obviously, I don't think we're going to have to pick a winner in that one, but I think we'll kind of give you an overview of what you should watch for, what we're going to watch for, and then obviously the week after that we'll be back with a recap and a look ahead to LSU. So until then, for John, Tommy, and Brian, that's a wrap.
Go Noles.